The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. Yeah, just watching with some interest what's going on with Iran. Of course, they're still occupying the headlines. We're not going to talk too much about it.
I know, but it's very, very strange. We've got three things happening there. We've got the Iranian attack on Iraqi forces. We've got a sizable earthquake near the nuclear facility. And we've got a Boeing 737 Ukrainian airline going down straight after takeoff, killing, 170 or 180 people in Teheran. It's weird,
and we've got
Anthony. It's
fake
weird.
Text messages that have gone out to U.S. citizens calling them up for a military draft.
Wow.
So, it's all getting quite interesting. The thing is that even though Iran has launched this missile attack against U.S. bases in Iraq, I don't think that that's the end of the story yet. And by the way, we've got another thing which caught my attention, which is the fact that 56 people were killed in the stampede at the Soleimani funeral. Really? That's just madness. That's
crazy.
Honestly madness. I mean, you know, I can't understand. I mean, that doesn't kind of really get the headlines. I mean, that was kind of just a by-the-way story. 156 people dead.
It did
and
make headlines here, I think.
123 people injured.
Yeah,
it's honestly madness.
The world is just a strange place. And of course, these stories are ones that we are going to be following very, very closely because we dare not take our eyes away from that region. Now, this is the first story that we're going to talk about. I was speaking to somebody who does a fair amount of business in Israel yesterday, and they were saying that this is a bigger story than we can possibly imagine, and how this is a game changer for Israel. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the construction of that undersea gas pipeline to Europe. So Israel, Greece, and Cyprus last week signed an agreement for the construction of an undersea gas pipeline to Europe. What is the significance of this gas to the Israeli economy?
Well, the gas itself we know about already. We've got the Leviathan gas field which has started to pump gas for the first time last week. Finally, after all the drilling activities and the platform being stationed off the Israeli coast and all that kind of stuff, all the billions of dollars that have been invested in the infrastructure to be ready, gas is now flowing from Leviathan. This is a big, big moment. And I agree with you that I think not enough is really made of it, because this is a very, very substantial moment in Israel's economy and indeed in the world economy, because, you know, the supplies of gas are limited. We've got these new gas fields that are being discovered within the Mediterranean. Apparently there's massive, massive supply there. So Israel not only has signed agreements with Egypt and with Jordan and, of course, with Israeli companies, the Israeli electric company and other companies that have the need for natural gas for energy production. But Israel is now looking towards Europe as a potential market. And we know that Europe is pretty much dependent on Russian gas, which is being piped across the Ukraine from Russia in that huge pipeline, the overland pipeline that runs in that direction through the Ukraine and via Turkey into Europe. And this agreement that Israel signed with Greece and Cyprus, and which will also be countersigned by Italy in due course, is the first undersea gas pipeline of its type in the world. It will run 1,900 kilometers, and it will connect gas fields off the coast of Cyprus and Israel to Europe via Greece and via Italy. And so, you know, the first thing, of course, is that this is massive for the Cypriot economy and for the Israeli economy in terms of getting income from the sale of that gas. But also, it potentially creates a bit of a conflict with Turkey. We'll talk about that in a moment. But also potentially creates a little bit of an issue with Russia, who's all, you know, earning massive amounts of money from the gas that they are piping into Europe and selling into Europe. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of this pans out. The issue with Turkey is, of course, that Turkey in December signed this strange agreement with Libya to redraw its maritime borders, its economic maritime borders. And those boundaries that Libya and Turkey have kind of bilaterally agreed amongst themselves really infringe very substantially on what was previously considered to be Cypriot territorial waters and indeed Greek territorial waters that kind of created this huge shelf that juts out between Cyprus and Crete right into the Mediterranean. And so it first of all creates further conflict with Greece and Cyprus, which Turkey, of course, has already over many years, since 1974, I think, when northern Cyprus was invaded by Turkey. But it now also potentially creates a little bit further conflict with Israel because it infringes upon that area of sea that the pipeline is due to run through. So this is all going to be quite fascinating to see how it pans out, because Turkey seems to be very, very aggressive in its approach, along with Libya, to enforce these new maritime borders that have been drawn. But I suspect that Israel will probably support Greece and Turkey in somehow challenging them. And I don't know who is actually authorized to hear this and to decide upon this, whether it's a United Nations kind of body or if it's somebody else. But I think that this is going to be some interesting stuff, interesting conflict resolution if it does get resolved before this gas pipeline can actually be constructed and will allow gas to flow to Europe. So I think in principle, it's a great idea. In practice, I think it's going to be quite difficult to see it implemented ultimately. But of course, as always with things in this region, we'll be watching carefully to see how it pans out.
And I guess it depends on how much everybody wants and needs the gas. So, you know, needs must. That'll see that, I reckon, will settle the situation. The Polish president has announced that he will not be attending the World Holocaust Forum event that's to be held in Jerusalem on January the 23rd.
Yeah, so this has come as a little bit of a surprise, but the Polish president has really been muscling himself into the event, which will be held at will be focused on Yad Vashem as the 75th anniversary event of the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp. This World Holocaust Forum has been an event that's been held in other parts of the world, including actually in Poland. I think there were two previous events that have been held in Poland. And for the 75th anniversary event, the Israeli government and the organizers have invited, I think, 40 world leaders or more, 45 world leaders to attend at Yad Vashem and in Jerusalem, including the royal members of the royal family from the UK and including President Vladimir Putin and including the presidents of France and the Chancellor of Germany. And, you know, there's going to be a very substantial audience of people, very, very high level audience, people coming along to attend this particular event. And the president of Poland has decided that he wants to speak at the event. He wants to be one of the main speakers. And the organizers, for reasons of their own, have decided that he will not be one of the speakers at the event, and that the main speakers will be the leaders of Russia, France, Germany, Britain, and a representative from the U.S. And I'm actually not quite sure who will be coming from the U.S., but there will be obviously high-level representation. And they will be the speakers and not the Polish president. And the reason that they've decided that those speakers will be the appropriate ones is apparently because those are the countries that formed the main backbone of the Allied forces during the course of the Holocaust and during the time of the Second World War. And, of course, Poland wasn't really there to be counted at that particular moment in time. So for whatever reason, the Polish president decided that he wanted to speak. He thought it was appropriate for the president of Poland to speak. And the fact that he will not be allowed to speak means that he has decided that he will not attend. End of story. That's the way that he's looking at things. And it sounds a little bit like someone's kind of stamping his feet in anger because he's not getting the attention that he needs. Apparently, the Polish president did say that he had registered his desire to speak already some 4 months ago with the organizers at Yad Vashem, and that this had kind of fallen on deaf ears. And so yesterday he decided that he was not going to attend as a result of their failure to agree that he will be allowed to speak. I don't know. It's interesting to know what the listeners might think about this, because there has, of course, been this huge controversy with Poland and the Polish participation in the Shoah events, and whether Polish people can potentially be held responsible. There's been a spat between Israel and Poland on this issue. There's a spat between Poland and Russia on this issue as well, about who was responsible for what at that particular time, and who can be therefore held accountable. Let's not forget, by the way, we talk about, you know, 6 million Jews who were killed in the Shoah. And, you know, without trying to detract from the seriousness and the tragedy that befell the Jewish nation, let's also remember that about 27 million Soviet soldiers and civilians died during that time as well. I mean, we're talking about substantial numbers of people beyond the 6 million of our people who were killed. So, you know, this was a very, very huge, substantial event. And of course, Poland didn't come out of this period of history smelling of roses. Of course, Poland was divided up between the Russians and the Germans, with both of the entities, both of those countries invading from different sides. And there are a lot of accusations that have been leveled against Polish people in general and against the Polish government at the time. And of course, the current president, President Duda, of Poland, has done whatever he can in order to try somehow to rehabilitate the name of Poland and the name of the Polish people from that particular period of time. And I think that his desire to speak at this event is linked to his attempt to try to emphasize the importance of Poland and what he feels Poland is justified in being credited with for actions at that time. But of course, the organizers think differently, and the Israeli government certainly doesn't agree with that. So
it's fascinating.
Seems as though
he part of me, I have to say, agrees with him. You know, if you've got Germany speaking, and Germany was the architect and the perpetrator of this war and of the Holocaust, and you've got Russia attending, and Russia certainly, in many areas, did not and has been held accountable for their behavior towards the Jewish community, surely Poland attending this and acknowledging it and being part of this process would actually be important. Obviously, I would imagine that they would have to be very clear on what the bloke was going to say, because if he is going to stand up and say that Poland held zero responsibility for it, then I guess that's what the organizers are fearful of. But I do think this would be an important step.
View, by the way, and it would be surprising if he didn't want to say that. So maybe that's, you know, part of the reason why they've decided that they don't really want him to speak, because he could potentially go off script and, you know, make these claims, which of course would not necessarily be welcome on the
Although
day.
By removing him from this, you move the positions much further away rather than closer together. You know, if he attends and he's there to hear and to understand and to witness it, you know, for this, during the ceremony, maybe there's, I don't really think that somebody would be so bold or so arrogant as to stand up and, at an event like this, surely, do damage or move further away from a unified position. It's really
we
not
like
worth
to
it.
Think not. Unfortunately, you know, the relationship between Israel and Poland has been suffering in recent years because of this issue. And it seems as if Poland's position is pretty much entrenched. And in fact, there's a lot of, you know, feeling within Poland about the issues that have been discussed and that will clearly be raised at this World Holocaust Forum event. So, you know, I'm just wondering to what extent he's trying to protect his own political collateral back home with these people and get support from people by showing himself to stand up on the world stage and to say what Polish people really want him to say about Poland's involvement in the Shoah.
I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519, that's the SMS line, or you can telegram us on 0618951019. I'm ambivalent about it. I'm really, I not convinced that they shouldn't have let him speak, but I do hear it. I'd love your thoughts on that. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We're out of time, as we always seem to be so quickly. We'll catch you tomorrow, same time, same place. It is 8 o'clock. Here is Zanotti with your news.